Oak session number 13247, reel 4.
Gilbert Green, reel 4. You must have wondered whether you were going to Burma or to the Middle East then.
Yes. That, I think, was the original of the idea. When we were diverted after crossing the Atlantic. However, we got as far as Bombay, and we stayed, as I say, there about a week or so, and then we went on board again to a much, much smaller ship, a beautiful ship. It was one of the original troopers from way back that were used by the army, Indian Army, for furloughs back in UK. There were three of them. They were all named after Indian rivers. And we were on the Salween. It was steam, but it also was a four-master. And had originally, before it was converted to steam, been a sailing ship. It was British officered with a Guernese crew, and all the fittings were brilliant brass. It was quite an Edwardian sort of ship. It really was beautiful. However, from Bombay we came up to the Red Sea, and we landed at first at Suez, and almost immediately we as a troop went down to a port, or rather not a port as such, but an oil field with its independent port about 150 miles south of Suez in the on the Egyptian coast, and that was bombed once while we were there, and one of the tankers which had been loading was burnt itself out. But the idea was that all the oil that this field was, it wasn't all that large a field, but large enough, it fed three small tankers which travelled up and down between Ras Gharib, where this field was, and Suez to the oil refinery there. And virtually that refinery was all the petrol that refinery was producing was going up to the desert for the Eighth Army. These three ships, one was would be at the oil field loading, one would be at Suez unloading, and the third one would be in transit. Either it took from virtually, they all travelled at night, and it took the dark hours to get from Ras Gharib up to Suez, so that the one travelling north to Suez would arrive in time to take over from the empty one, who would then return. By the time he got back to Ras Gharib, the newly filled one would be on its way up to Suez. It was very useful for travelling backwards and forward from our site round the oil field, because the road was non-existent. Every time we sent a ration truck down from Suez to the troop, it took all day, bouncing over small boulders and rough tracks. And every time it did the round trip, it was in workshops for 2 days for all the nuts and bolts to be tightened up. So that these trips, it was tried to keep them to a minimum. So if ever I had to go up to headquarters or anything, I used to hitch a ride on one of these tankers. They underneath the bridge, there were four four cabins, four passengers, if and when. And I quite enjoy the trip, actually, little sea trip backwards and forward, although it was a bit dangerous because if had anything happened or they'd been attacked, they were so overloaded that they were just packed tight with oil to the extent that the decks were virtually awash. And there had been very little hope of survival had they been hit, as this one was, as I say, soon after we were there, by an Italian bomber, of all things.
Where did they journey from and to?
Well, this oil field, as I say, was about 150 miles south of Suez, on the Gulf of Suez, just about where it met the Red Sea. And it was very interesting, in fact, because most of the people operating this field, they come from all over the world, the Australians, Norwegians, Chinese, almost every nation you could think of. And a lot of them were the last ones out. They got out of Singapore. They were on the last boat out of Singapore before Singapore was taken by the Japs. And it was a fantastic club they had there. I've never seen a bar like it. I don't think there's any bar anywhere who had so many bottles of every possible thing you could think of.
But what was supposed to be the role of your unit in the Middle East?
Well, we were then, of course, were defending this oil field from attack by enemy aircraft. We just had our own six guns, and then we had attached, apart from just the troop, we had two other units attached, each commanded by a sergeant, a searchlight and a radar.
What was the name of the oil field?
Ras Gharib, RASGHARIB. I looked at various maps and I've only found it on one of them. It's quite a small, insignificant place. Or it may not still be there, I don't know. I imagine...
Did you get many attacks?
No, there was only the one, as I say, while we were there. The rest of the time was very casual. I suppose it wasn't really on a regular route, or there were far too other better targets than... Although the fact that it was feeding virtually the Eighth Army, I would have thought would have made it quite, given it some sort of priority.
We're talking about the spring of 43 now.
Yes, that's right.
So presumably as the Eighth Army advanced further and farther westwards, it became increasingly less necessary to guard this oil field.
Possibly, yes. This may well have been the reason that people ignored it, because, of course, there were other oil available in North Africa anyway.
And you were becoming increasingly out of range of Axis air power.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes. I didn't see much... didn't see any German. As I say, it was this one lone Italian bomber. I don't quite know where it had come from or where it was going, but it... did the job all right on one of these tankers. Then, when we left there, we came up to back to Suez, and went across the desert into Syria, to Damascus. And then from Damascus to Beirut, and then from Beirut down to Palestine, where we spent quite a while in Palestine, around Haifa mostly, where we worked with the Palestine police.
Doing what?
Internal security. Because at that time, the There were, in fact, there were special branch officers from Scotland Yard over there, and the Stern gang were very active. And they were trying to do damage to the oil refinery and the storage tanks outside Haifa. They did, in fact, blow one up while we were there. And two of the special branch people were killed there by the Stern gang. But there were all sorts of things going on at that time in Palestine, which was more than the police could cope with. And virtually our detachments became patrols of, as I say, the gun commanders were sergeants. They became patrols of a sergeant and 7 or 8 men and one Palestine policeman. And they used to go into the various settlements and villages in Palestine and try and sort out all these people who were causing trouble within Palestine.
Did you go out on those yourself?
No, we did from time to time, but not regularly, on a regular basis. We kept an eye on our patrols, obviously, who were going with these police. The police were virtually in charge, and we were backing them up.
So this was Royal Artillery converted to an infantry role?
Virtually, yes. Yeah. We did some training there. There was a big firing camp on the coast, and we did a lot of ACAC training there. There's a big RAF station just near Haifa, and they had Blenheim bombers there, which used to go up with towing a drogue, which we used to fire at to keep the gunners up to scratch. But the sort of things that happened, I remember one village that one of the patrols went into, if I remember rightly, there were 3 or 4 police, the Palestine police on this one, and they went into one of these. There were virtually nothing more than mud houses and mud huts and some of them. And they went into the courtyard of one of these and dug up the courtyard, and there was a brand new, unused, well greased and packed 25-pounder artillery piece buried in the courtyard of this place.
This was a Jewish settlement, was it?
I think it was Arab. Arab, I'm sure. But they were the sort of things that...
Because the Stern gang was a Jewish gang.
The Stern gang was, yes. But I'm almost sure, I think, that this was an Arab one. Because they were very good at all sorts of... unlicensed behaviour. From there we went down into Egypt and went to a vast holding camp in the desert behind between Cairo and Ismailia at Tel al-Kabir, which was a complete area of tented camps, 2 or 3 marquees and a circle of tents or a square tent with a square sort of prey ground in the middle, which was reserved for regiments and infantry battalions who were in transit, moving from one area to another. And we stayed there a little while. Everybody in turn took their turn at guarding the camps. We weren't there long enough, actually. Our turn didn't come round, but neighbours in the camp next to us, who were an infantry battalion, took their turn at general guard duty, and the guard consisted of normally a section of Bren carriers, three Bren carriers, and a platoon of infantry. And one night there were shots being fired from the desert outside these camps. And this patrol section and platoon went dashing out to see what was going on, the carriers and the riflemen. And they were coming from the other side of a ridge. So they went up to the ridge and lay down, ready to give fire, and fired shots where they could see anyone and that sort of thing. And they must have been, I suppose, engaged for about an hour, possibly a bit more. And when they came back, another camp, just a little bit farther down the road the other way, had completely disappeared. This was all a faint attack that had happened in the desert that they chased after. Another load of Arabs with racing camels had come along and taken down all the tents, packed them on these racing camels, and disappeared in the desert the other way. Complete camp.
So it was a gang robbery?
Yeah.
Which worked?
Oh, yes. Although they were very good, they were very good. I remember when at one time we were in the canal zone, and there were two of us in a tent. The officers had small tents for two. And the chap here that was with me woke up one morning to discover that he was lying on his camp bed with nothing else. He'd gone to sleep with... The officers had bed rolls. That bed was made up in, and you roll it out, and you could pack all your stuff in the middle of it and roll it up and move on to the next place, a canvas bedroll. And his bedroll and his blankets and his pillow and everything had gone. They'd roll him over and slid the whole thing out one way, roll him back again and got the rest out the other side, gone off with it. I mean, vehicles, you'd come out and see a vehicle, well, this happened in several, not only in the Middle East, in Greece as well. You never ever left a vehicle. Otherwise, if you came back, all the wheels would be gone. And they were all, had bricks underneath the axles, all four wheels gone. And if you went to, we all wore desert boots, you know, and I took them to a local shoe repairer, bootmaker, to have the soles redone. And when they came back, they had beautiful soles with thick rubber soles on. You turn them over, and it was all the tire tread was still on it. They were cut up tires from a 1500 weight or a Jeep or something. And that was quite a regular thing. In Cairo, they used to say, because we went through sometimes if we were moving from one place to another or going on leave, something like that. On a train, you said, if you pull out of the station, never ever lean out of the window. Or with it resting your arms on the window, as you looked out. Because most of us, because of the heat and the sweating all the time, leather straps didn't last very long, and there was linen straps you could buy, which were quite cheap, and if they rotted away with sweat, you could always chuck them away. And so if you rested on the window with your hands in front of you, the young Arabs with their big skirted shirts that they wore would run along in pairs, one with a razor blade, one holding his skirt up, as it were, once the train was moving so that you were going too fast for it to stop. And they'd run along with the razor blade and slitting these as they went along, and the watch would drop into the sky of the one following. I used to collect watches. Yeah. And you never bought never buy. If you want any shoe polish, boot polish, only get it from the Nephi, because they used to sell it, all these young arrows. Perfectly new, brand new tins. And you buy this tin for obviously cheaper than the Nephi was selling them. And when you went to use them, there was a scrape of polish on the top, and then it was full of sand added. Anyway, interspersed with these happenings, and we were organised from the canal zone, which is ran along the length of the canal virtually, various camps, into an enormous convoy, which was all artillery and armour. And we travelled for 3 days from Egypt, right the way through Palestine and Syria, up to the Turkish border at Homs and Aleppo. Stalin had been calling for a second front and trying to pressurise Churchill into doing something about it to relieve the pressure. And so this was to be a token force to help him. But we got to the Turkish border and the Turks didn't want to know. They didn't want to lose their neutrality by allowing us to go through Turkey. So that we came to a dead halt on the Syria-Turkish border. So we all turned round and came back again. And after a few weeks, we all formed up again and did the thing again. And again, they wouldn't let us through. So we all came back again. Incidentally, I can't remember whether it was the first time or the second time now, but the sort of things that happened again. We used to pull in lager off the main road, coast road, at night, and then move off at first light again the next morning. But it was quite a trip, you know, for the drivers, you know, a bit of break. And one of these trips, we were up at, as I say, crack of dawn, ready to pull out, and in front of us there was a regiment of 25 pounders, field artillery. And they got the first battery away and the second battery away and the third battery, which was right at the back, of course, went to pull away, and they came down to the last gun. In those days, the 25-pounder had a limber and a quad, square Morris towing vehicle, known as a quad. And the complete unit, quad, limber and gun, wasn't there. It had disappeared in the night.
Where was this?
This was in Palestine. On the way up. As I say, I can't remember. It's the first trip we did up to Aleppo or Homs, or the second one, but one on. Yeah, just disappeared. Obviously, there was a hell of a stink about it. An inquiry that we'd all gone by then, so I don't know how it finished up, but you know, it's amazing that things that could happen and did happen. I remember one thing when we first arrived in Palestine, jumping about a bit, we were billeted in the Haifa Working Men's Club, of all things, which was a three-sided building, the main building, and then two wings. And our troop headquarters was in the wing on the right, and there was a big, we call it parade ground. Of course, it was just a car park, I suppose, really, when it was functioning as a working men's club. And the centre, main block, was facing the sea. It was only 50 or 60 yards from the sea. And we pulled in there late in the afternoon. And we'd come down from Syria. We're all a bit sort of weary and worn, very hot, of course. And so we had to get all the stuff off the vehicles and into the building, and bed rolled, laid out, and cooks sorted out with their cooking arrangements and everything. So we were all in a bit of a hurry. But as we piled off, we saw disappearing down this sandy patch between the building and the sea some most beautiful bronzed, dark long-haired bodies. They looked absolutely gorgeous. You know, we hadn't seen women for all the chaps were whooping up. So he said, "You stay here, you've got work to do. You can't get off until we've got the vehicles unloaded," and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, we got sorted out eventually after about a couple of hours, I suppose, or something. And they all went galloping down for a swim to join these suntan beauties with their long dark hair. But I'm afraid they were in for a bitter disappointment, because unknown to us, this other wing, the other side, was occupied by a battalion of Sikhs. And there were these Sikhs with their long hair stripped off going down for a swim. So they were bitterly disappointed, I'm afraid. Our chaps, still there you are. That was one of the lighter sides, I suppose.
You've put down there on the form that you've kindly filled out that you were converted to infantry.
Yes, this comes next. Because whilst we were in... No, we went back to... After we'd been in Palestine, when we went back into Egypt the next time, there were no aircraft left for us to shoot down anyway. So our role became superfluous. And because Italy needed reinforcements, we were about halfway up Italy by then, it was decided all the ACAC regiments would be broken up. So we all went back to the Canal Zone, which was one of the main bases in Egypt, and all the officers went one way, and all the troops went the other way, and went on infantry training courses. And we joined two other regimental officers, three other regiments, and made up an infantry company of about 120, all officers, into Palestine, back to a training area where we trained as an infantry company. All officers. We used to take turns on being platoon commanders and company commanders, and one day you'd have a captain on the Bren gun, and perhaps a